You've just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do next? We're going to Sounds Dangerous. Yeah!
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Jonathan, and welcome to the Laughing Place Podcast.
And because of the upcoming Olympics, our episode is themed to sports. We're going to talk about ESPN involvement in the theme parks and the top 10 Disney athletes, as well as give trivia and our thoughts on the news. So let's get started.
On February 15th and 16th, visitors to New York City will get a big surprise when they discover Everest in the City, a display of mountainous proportions right in the middle of Times Square. A huge display of Mount Everest, which will cover 57 stories on two buildings, will be the backdrop of the event. Everest in the City will combine daring mountain climbing and rappelling with dramatics of an aerial dance.
Sounds like Cirque du Soleil Everest. No, but seriously, that sounds like it'll definitely be something to see.
Disney Channel has promoted its key original series programming executive Adam Bonnet, along with the channel's top development executive Jeff Brustrom, and has also recruited Emmy Award-winning animator Mike Moon to further build its animated series business. Oriental Land Company Limited has announced that the new Disney Hotel, scheduled to open in Tokyo Disney Resort in Japanese fiscal year 2008, will be named Tokyo Disneyland Hotel. The new hotel will be built in front of Tokyo Disneyland Park, with the Disney Resort Line's Tokyo Disneyland Station in between. The hotel will reflect the early 20th century Victorian architectural style, found in the park's World Bazaar-themed land, the monorail station, and the main entrance area. Beginning February 23rd, Disney's Paradise Pier Hotel will become a non-smoking hotel. On March 5th, the Disneyland Hotel will also become a non-smoking hotel. The non-smoking policy applies to all guest rooms and interior public spaces. Guests who have already requested smoking rooms with their reservation will be advised of the new policy. On Sunday, February 12th, one celebrity couple from Dancing with the Stars will practice a new ballroom dance routine at Disneyland in front of Sleeping Beauty's castle. Disney has agreed to let sportscaster Al Michaels go to NBC in exchange for the rights to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, the character Walt Disney lost the rights to before creating Mickey Mouse.
It's amazing to me that Disney seems to be using ESPN as a bargaining chip to get an animated character. It's about the first time I've ever seen synergy work quite like this, and I think it's neat. Not sure if it was the best business decision or if NBC is coming way ahead in the deal, but hey, it's nice to see Oswald back with the Disney company again.
So does this mean that someday we'll see Oswald the Lucky Rabbit in a cartoon, or just we'll keep the old stuff around?
That will be interesting to see. I know that there is a lot of Oswald merchandise in Japan right now, but in America, obviously, they haven't done much with the character. So it'll be interesting to see if Disney tries to resurrect the character by making new shorts or putting him on TV or something. I mean, at least now they can release treasures, and so you can see these original cartoons.
Pixar will now produce about 2 films a year and will take over production on Toy Story 3.
My only concern with Pixar producing 2 movies a year is just the quality. Sometimes if you extend yourself too thin, your quality suffers. Hopefully this won't be the case, and we'll just get 2 amazing good movies a year, because I think we certainly could use it. There's not a lot of great movies out there, so I don't mind it, but we'll see how it goes in terms of quality.
Well, I mean, they change directors practically for every movie they do, so I mean, they definitely have a big group of people, so I can't imagine it being any much of a difference at all when it comes to that. I mean, obviously they'd be working a lot, but I mean, I think they have a big group of people, so it wouldn't really detract from anything. Today's trivia question is, which Disney animated film features the fight song "On Wisconsin"? The answer is coming up.
And now it's time for Armchair Imagineering, where we formulate ideas for Disney destinations all around the world. Today's topic is ESPN and how it could get more involved in the theme parks and just sports themes in general. First of all, they've already done a very successful program in Walt Disney World with the ESPN Weekends, where they have lots of interactive exhibits. You can become a SportsCenter commentator and get a DVD of that, and they have athletes and question and answer sessions, and I think that's a really great event. However, it seems like they could be doing more things like that throughout the year, and I think that there's a availability for that. If you look at it, they have this entire big Wide World of Sports area, which is fairly busy when there's an event going on, but besides that, it doesn't seem like much people go over there. And I know they've tried to do programs and whatnot, but I would think that if they had some more interesting interactive exhibits or something of that nature, you might get some more guests over there, almost making it like a sports Disney Quest type setup with lots of sports games and things like that.
But we all know how well Disney Quest is doing.
It's true. I'm not sure. I think when it push comes to shove, people have so much time on their vacation. I mean, only so much time on their vacation, and they want to be spending it on rides and attractions. And so sports-related stuff probably would fall by the wayside, which is why they would have to make sure it's really unique. Maybe try to come up with some more unique sporting activities that you wouldn't usually be able to do.
One of the only things I could really think of at the top of my head would be shows to incorporate some sort of sport elements to shows, like with Lights, Motors, Action, make it focused on, you know, NASCAR or something like that, sort of incorporate different sports within shows rather than exhibits, because I'm not sure if that's, you know, you could go to any arcade and find some sort of sport related activity to do something a little bit more unique. And I don't think the football EMV ride would do very well either, so
I don't think that sports really lend themselves to a ride. Maybe a NASCAR type ride, but in general, I think that's a good idea. Show they have tried like to incorporate some sporting type activities, like the Tarzan Rock Show had like the rollerbladers and things like that, and they did do the X Games experience at Disney's California Adventure, which wasn't all that successful, but who knows if it had more to do with the park or whatnot. It may have been more successful had they done it in Florida. I'm not sure. It seems like there is a market in terms of that extreme, like, skate park type activity, and there really isn't any outlet for any of that in Walt Disney World. I mean, I don't even really understand why there isn't a skate park at Wide World of Sports. Maybe they don't want a certain clientele, but on the other hand, I know it's a very popular activity, and they could make a really amazing one, and I think that would get some people over to that complex.
I mean, they could also probably make it for the chance of actually having events to be held there too, perhaps. I mean, to build another sort of, you know, how they have the golf courses and they actually, like, do hold real championships there, to have sort of a skate park, which is actually used by professionals.
Another somewhat sporting type event, a little more on the minor side, would be bowling, and there's no bowling alley on property either. That's a very popular activity for families to do. It's one of the few that isn't represented. I have heard a rumor that they may be adding one to Pleasure Island, and I think it's a great idea. If I were them, I would go really crazy and have a normal bowling alleys, but then maybe have like a couple lanes that are really insane where different things happen, like maybe holes develop in the lane or like obstacles, and make it really zany and unlike any other bowling alley you've ever seen.
Would they want to incorporate characters and everything to that, or would they just make it a generic Disney bowling?
I would say that I might keep a few lanes that are not Disney character oriented, just in case people, like especially adults, may not want to see the characters, but I definitely would try to incorporate the characters as much as possible. And if you went with the really zany idea, actually every frame I would make a different theme, and the lighting would change, and there might be projections on the lane or something. Like, I'd go really nuts and make it to where it's the cinematic experience that you really wouldn't be able to find anywhere else. Another popular trend is these snowboarding complexes that are kind of coming up around the world. I know there's one somewhere in the Middle East where it's very hot, but yet indoors in this complex, they're actually able to snowboard and ski. And that's another thing that would be popular at Walt Disney World, although I know a lot of its clientele is northerners that wouldn't be too excited by it. But on the other hand, if it's a climate-controlled environment and it enables you to have the perfect slope, then I would see that also being a very popular activity. Well, that concludes our discussion for Armchair Imagineering. Next week, we are planning on discussing a water park concept for the Disneyland Resort out in California.
So if you have any ideas, you could call us toll-free at 1-866-327-5072. And if you're under 18 years of age, please make sure you have your parents' or guardian's permission before calling. You could also email us at podcast@laughingplace.com, or you could leave a post in the laughingplace.com message boards under the podcast section.
And this week in Disney history, February 14th is the 33rd anniversary of World's Greatest Athlete. February 15th is the 56th anniversary of Cinderella.
And now a review of Snow Dogs, Eight Below. We were able to see a sneak preview of the movie, so here are our thoughts.
That scientist is obsessed with rocks. No, seriously, the first half of the movie, I felt very, very cold, and it was actually quite depressing. They're basically, basically the first half is a pretty adventurous. People are freezing and people are falling into water, and you know, it's quite exciting. The dogs get to save a scientist who is looking for a meteor from Mercury or some place like that. Yeah, I remember the movie very well, as you can notice. No, but my thoughts was it was quite good. There was even a jump scene in it. There was action. There was drama, and it was quite. Compiled nicely. It was better than I thought it would be, because the previews basically, you know, showed dogs, the film. I mean, I didn't think they could necessarily pull off just a movie of dogs the whole way through, but they sort of put other different plots in between to keep your interest a little bit more towards it.
I thought the movie was good. It was somewhat a basic type plot line. You could pretty much determine exactly what was going to happen from the beginning, but on the other hand, it was enjoyable. The cinematography at times was really excellent. I especially like the shot with the icebreaker ship cutting through the ice. I thought that was a very beautiful looking shot. And there were some very interesting scenes. The action scenes particularly were really well directed, and for a family-type movie, it kind of kept you on the edge of your seat a few times and became a little, not that intense, but it was definitely got your heart pumping in a few minutes of it. Overall, I thought it was a good movie. The only thing I would have recommended is maybe cut about 15-20 minutes out of it. I thought it did lag a little bit in times, and some of the acting I thought was a little bit wooden. I think that was because the characters were kind of generic type people, but I think I would have preferred the movie a little more if they would have been a little more interesting. I did, however, like the major ripoff of the Riley character from National Treasure, though.
What was really sad was throughout the movie, I was trying to figure out how many dogs were there at the beginning, because sadly enough, a few dogs don't make it to the end. But it is kind of weird that I completely forgot that the title of the movie was Eight Below, and I couldn't determine how many dogs there were at the beginning. I feel very stupid.
I did find it a little hard to track sometimes how many dogs were on the screen. I'd kind of spend the time like counting them, and then it would cut away, and then I'd have to count them over again. That was funny. Another thing about the movie that is a little disappointing is that for something based on a true story, it's really not that similar at all. For one thing, the original group was Japanese, and I think it's rather sad that there's only Americans presented in the movie, and then there's Italians. There's like nobody that's even close to Asian in the movie, and that's a little bit disappointing considering the actual story involved Japanese people. Kind of a sign of our culture, if you ask me.
There was a lot of fresca in this movie.
I never thought I would see a movie that references frescas. Who would have thought they ever would have gotten product placement? Another thing about the movie is I did like the score for the music. However, I did think the music at sometimes was a little over the top and almost borderline on just melodramatic and almost took away from a few scenes because it was like they were trying to milk the scenes for all they were worth. I think it'll work for some people. For me, it just played a little too heavy. But it was pretty music. I didn't have a problem with it. It just didn't fit with the scenes as well as I would have liked. Overall, I think this is a nice epic type movie that will work very well for family audiences, especially those with older children, and it really reminds me of some of the great adventure films that Disney provided in the past.
The trivia question was, which Disney animated film features the fight song On Wisconsin? The answer is Robin Hood. Today's top 10 list is about athletes, the best athletes in the Disney films. Number 10, Goofy.
Not particularly good at anything he does, but he does try everything, and he does manage to pull off some pretty amazing athletic maneuvers, especially when he was riding the roller coaster with the octopus in Aquamania. That's one of my favorites.
Number 9, the Medfield College athletes in the Absent-Minded Professor and Son of Flubber films.
What got into him?
I don't know. Maybe it was that pep talk Professor Brainerd gave him.
What did he say?
I wish I could remember.
Who knew these movies would be so prophetic in terms of satirizing the athletes using some sort of medical influence to enhance their performance skills? You think they would have been disqualified or something?
Medical? It's not really medical.
Okay, chemical then.
Number 8, the hare from The Tortoise and the Hare.
His work ethic is very lacking. However, he does have natural athletic ability, like when he could play tennis with himself. Not many people could do that.
Number 7, Gus from Gus.
Take it from me, if the Adams think they're going to let that mule kick, it's pie in the sky, and I never lie. There's just no way.
How about this way?
There's no way!
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
According to the official rules of the National Football League, the game is to be played by two teams of 11 players each. The rule book does not define the word player. Therefore, a player could be a man, a woman, or anyone a team chooses to represent them on the field.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, the mule Gus will be allowed to play.
And as you say, Pepper, there's no way.
Very, very talented. However, he's kind of a one-trick pony. Donkey.
He's a mule.
Sorry. Oyage. I would really like to know what that means anyway.
Google. Number 6. Mel Clark from Angels in the Outfield. He used to be.
In the end, when no angels could help him out, he was able to pull off an amazing run. So, good athlete.
He used to be. They say that. Number 5, Air Bud.
From absolutely everything. I was a little worried when they started to announce that they were going to do the Air Bud on Ice and the Air Bud hang glider direct-to-videos. Then it was getting a little too far.
Number 4, the Jamaican bobsled team.
Some people say you know they can't believe. Jamaica, we have a bobsled team. No people say, you know, they can't believe. Jamaica, we have a bobsled team.
They persevere till the very end, carrying their very heavy sled right after they go through an amazing crash. They're quite amazing athletes.
Number 3, the Mighty Ducks.
It's all about the flying V, if you ask me. And the knuckle puck. That was pretty good.
Number 2, Nanu from The World's Greatest Athlete.
He got the record in absolutely everything, so he's just barely not number 1, and I don't even know why he isn't. He really should be number 1, shouldn't he?
The long hair loses some points there, that's why.
Okay, that's why he's not number 1.
Yeah, he needs to work on his style a bit.
I can't believe it's not butter.
And now, number 1 in the best athletes. It's the U.S. hockey team in Miracle.
Do you believe in miracles? I do. That's why I was traded for Oswald the Lucky Rabbit.
Miracles happen once in a while, if you believe.
Well, that brings us to the end of another exciting edition of the Laughing Plays podcast. Remember, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, whatnot, you can call us toll-free at 1-866-2-LAUGH. 327-5072. If you're under 18 years of age, please make sure you have your parents' or guardian's permission before calling. You can also email us at podcast@laughingplace.com or just post in the podcast section on the laughingplace.com discussion boards. Next week, we're going to be talking about a water park concept for the Disneyland Resort. Now, I do want to bring up a voicemail that we did get a little while back, and they were asking about the Let's Hear It for Robin Hood album. The Let's Hear It for Robin Hood album, which was recorded by Louis Prima and released around the release date of the original Robin Hood, is now available at the Wonderland Music System at both theme parks. Now, the Wonderland Music System is a great new concept. It's a computer system in some of the shops that allows you to print on demand CDs of out-of-print records and older CDs. And Let's Hear for Robin Hood is one of the choices. So if you're interested in getting the album, just head out to the theme parks. And now Jonathan with the last words.
Never smile at a crocodile.
But you can smile at alligators all you want.
Goodbye. See ya.
We can't let the friar down. Life's a ball when he's round. He loves to sneeze and he loves to cough, but he can't do either with his head chopped off.